So
If
there's
you're
a lot
just
of good
joining us,
stuff.
this is Tim at Kuan Yin Healing, and we're just kind of chatting about past calls here. If you're just joining us, so how did that? You were just saying you went back and listened to the recordings from the beginning and were taking notes. So how did that go for you?
Good, good. Just, you know, just kind of reinforces everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it gives me a visual to go back to, you know, kind of look over and implement.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Plus you can stop it, you know, every time you say something really good, I could pause it and write it down.
Oh, cool. That'd be great. I would love at some point to, we can talk about this later towards the end. I'd love to hear what everybody has as the high points of what they find as the high points as we went through all this. How did it go with the homework this week? Does anybody remember what it is?
Well, it was going back over, wasn't it? Going back over. And
so actually, there are two parts. So let's start there. Does anybody have any thoughts, reflections on the material as you went back over it? Any new insights, breakthroughs?
I was supposed to dig a little deeper, especially with
mm-hmm.
Week one stuff.
Hi, it's right. Nicole.
Hi, Nicole.
Hey, how are you guys?
Well, great. We're chatting about what we found going back through what we've done so far.
Very good.
In the first 4 weeks. So, how did it go? Then the other thing we were talking about was looking at our meditation practice and separating our thoughts from our existence. That's, I didn't put it quite that starkly. Being able to find that space between who we are and our thoughts, how did that go?
It was pretty hard.
No argument there.
Right.
Tim, can you ask that question again?
Sure. So we were talking about recognizing that our thoughts are not our identity, and including in meditation practice too, that recognition that here are my thoughts and here I am over here, that there's a space between us. We're not the same.
Yeah, I've had to call on that quite a bit this week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Yeah,
we're all very chatty today.
Yeah. I'm finding that's actually getting easier for me. It doesn't mean that it's not hard. It's still very hard, but week to week it's becoming easier.
Mm-hmm.
I had started a meditation practice about a year ago, and it's been kind of sporadic, but it's been really much more consistent since we started this journey. And I think that the more digging I've been doing into myself, the easier it's been to just let the thoughts be and to see myself as a separate entity than all of that baggage, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I agree with that as well. Nicole, I've been meditating since July, and I've had a lot of revelations with my practice, which has been pretty consistent. I would say since July, there was probably a couple of months total that maybe I, you know, over the time that I wasn't practicing every day. But since we've begun this journey, and definitely in reading Ram Dass's book, both you, Tim, and Ram Dass giving a real clear, like, vocabulary and definition, I feel like I keep feeling like that movie, The Matrix, where he sees what's really going on, and I'm able to really look at, well, a couple different things, but really able to look at, like, patterns, you know, things that are my thoughts that aren't me, and being able to be separate from them, and it's been really, really amazing, and today I was feeling like, wow, perhaps I'm recovered from being an overthinker, but I won't think too much about it. But I'm really feeling like in the flow a lot more, but also being able to really identify things that I want to change as being a thought that goes down this whole path, and that I can halt it at any point and switch gears in a way that I haven't felt previously. That's like awesome.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's an old joke that says meditation is not what you think.
Yeah. Exactly. Though now that I've said this, of course, something will completely hobble me and throw me for a loop, because that always seems to be the case whenever I feel like, okay, I've got this little piece down. Then it's like, okay, good, you're ready for a bigger challenge.
Since you invoked the Matrix, did you notice that the Matrix is entirely about the hero's journey?
It is about the hero's journey. You know, yeah, I've been seeing the hero's journey in a lot of things in a way that I never, I never knew that term in a deep way that I've been feeling it in the last couple of weeks, nor have I ever understood the term raising my vibration in a way that I'm coming to understand it in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, yeah, excellent. That's actually one of my major objectives for this course, is exactly what you said. People throw that term around, but what the hell does it mean to actually do that?
And operating from my highest self, that's another one that, you know, you talked a little bit about. It's not necessarily highest, like, you know, you're a broken thing that needs fixing, but more like the circle, the ripple's getting bigger, and that highest self is where the awareness is, where you go, oh, there's my brain over there chattering away, you know, saying this thing or that thing, and isn't that interesting, and wow, that doesn't serve me, and having that objectivity is sort of not a high or lower, but like a more encompassing.
Yeah.
You know, this is Selena. One thing that I've really, really noticed, and this happens, I was working on site with a client, an IT company last week, and at the end of the day, I was driving home, and I noticed something about myself was different. One thing in my life that I've really struggled with is people, like, niching me into different boxes, like I'm this person to them or I'm that person to them, and I struggled with, you know, being a whole person and how to be that whole person. And I always got really frustrated that people wanted me to be this one view and that was it. And then I discovered that I did that to myself all the time. Like, I was the professional person, I was the healing person, I was... And on site with this client last week, for that whole day, I was my whole complete person. It was phenomenal. Like, all of my different parts of me, I brought all of those parts into the coaching that I'm doing. I'm coaching a team of people and helping them to work better together. And, like, all of my interest areas across, like, physical fitness, gardening, like, you name it, I've talked about it with people to help form relationships with them. And it all just kind of fell into place. And I left the office that day just kind of scratching my head saying, wow, like, this journey has been a lot of ups and downs, but it's really working. It's phenomenal.
Yeah. Very, very, very
like
awesome.
Coaching your own inner team.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
kind of what it feels like. Yeah.
There's a number of meditations around that. I use Yoga Glow a lot. I'm going to post that on our Facebook page because I really like some of the guided meditations there, but there's several I've done that really have to do with this idea of letting go of roles. You know, I am more than my role of this, and it's like all the things that we're saying of that, like backing up and seeing the parts, and that, you know, we're more and we're we're more than the sum of our parts.
Yes.
Great.
Perfect. Yeah, absolutely. This is awesome. What else? Or was that it? One of the key things to look at, and the couple things I'm going to talk about today. One is another way to look at the hero's journey, and that is another archetype. It's similar to the hero's journey, called the Virgin's Promise. And we have a little bit more to talk about in the hero's journey, but in short, you know, the hero lives an ordinary world until one day he receives a call to adventure. He refuses the call, but after meeting his mentor, he crosses the first threshold to this strange magical land, and the hero is tested and meets allies who can help him learn about his enemies, and we make preparations to enter and slay these demons, and the hero faces a near death in the lair, of course, the problem, and escapes but with his life, but of course the near death is actually the death of the ego. And this rewards the hero with an advantage when he next faces this enemy, the shape-shifting demons I talked about in the video that I posted on the materials page. We'll talk more about this process of continually gaining advantages as we really kind of continue to expand self-awareness and self-knowledge, as you were talking about. And next week we'll talk about the awareness plane. But there's another archetype that's very similar, the Virgin's Promise, that might help both clarify these ideas as well as maybe give you a metaphor that you feel more comfortable with in certain situations. And you'll recognize a lot of stories that follow this path as well. Off the top of my head, I'm thinking of stories like Tootsie, The Other Boleyn Girl, Pretty Woman, Working Girl, Ever Afters. The major difference between the virgin and the hero is the relationship to the community. The hero comes from a village that's basically good, and he seeks to preserve this village, and it remains relatively unchanged from the beginning to the end, this ordinary world. The hero leaves this village to ward off the danger and creates, you know, havoc in a foreign land. So the antagonist in the hero's journey is this foreign land. Of course, that's the whole problem, is learning to leave our comfort zone, and that the foreign land is actually where all the magic happens. The virgin lives in a kingdom that's in need of change. The kingdom is stagnating and needs to allow more individual freedom. Now, this, of course, is true of the comfort zone generally. It's just that, in this case, the focus is on the entire situation rather than just one person's comfort zone. I kind of like the difference between tragedy and comedy, the focus on a person versus everybody. And the growth of the virgin forces the growth of the kingdom. Okay? So what happens here is it's just a journey. It's still a journey. It's simply a journey within. So the virgin has this, finds this magic land that's right where she is. It's kind of an escape. And in this magic land, she really shines. She has special gifts and abilities, and but it's a secret, you know, that she keeps sneaking off to. And one day she's caught in this secret land, or another way to look at that, she's caught shining, she's caught being who she really is and glowing, and this forces a crisis. Does she be who she really is? Does she be what everybody expects her to be? There's no way to be both. It's because being who she really is going to wreak havoc in the kingdom. And so, you know, here the, you know, the higher self is actually, in some ways, seeing the demon because it shakes up the status quo. The hero ensures stability. The virgin brings chaos. The hero goes to foreign land. The virgin stays home. The hero learns to be self-sacrificing, and his highest purpose is to overcome his mother complex and learn to live without the comfort and ease and security he feels at home, facing fear of death, expanding the limits which he can understand he can survive. The virgin is about learning to be self-fulfilling. Her highest purpose is to overcome her father complex, make choices in her life based on her own values. And she must follow her passion, know joy and love. She's about awakening sexuality, spirituality, creativity, making dreams come true. The hero's learning to do, the virgin's learning to be. They both face the challenge of knowing oneself as an individual. The hero is challenged to physically know he can survive. And the virgin is growing to stand as an individual, psychologically and emotionally. If once you start recognizing these in movies more, you'll notice that often a hero and a virgin are paired together as a love interest.
Mm.
So they're not unique from each other. In a real sense, but they are polar opposites in the way that they approach this journey. It's an outward going versus an inner going. But although in a different order, the effects are the same. It shakes up the community. And the only real difference is the hero is, you know, this is a tragic story. Then the hero goes off to master self. The virgin, although she's looking at an individual thing, she totally shakes up the community. The hero brings something back from the journey later to give to the community and change in that way. But so in a way, the you know, we think that the hero is going off to do the major quest, but the virgin really shakes the whole assumptions that a society is looking at. So shakes up everybody's comfort zone. She's not playing her established role versus exceeding her limits. So just a different way of understanding it, a really interesting archetype, as well as several cultural biases. You know, I mean, bluntly, that man goes off to find himself and conquer himself and change things. Everybody applauds. The virgin goes off to be something other than what people expect her to do, and everybody gets upset. You know, they get over it eventually.
Cool.
Yeah.
Who's Roxy?
So another way to look at the same thing. All right, well, after we separate thought and we're able to get some space between ourselves and our thoughts, and it's sounding like that's all well in process, and like you've all said, it's a process. It happens. You get better and better at it. But since we're experiencing it and starting to just get better at it, we're ready to talk about what comes beyond. The problem is everything that comes beyond is outside of the realm of our thoughts. It's at a faster vibration. And so our habits of trying to wrap our heads around things isn't going to work well. And what I'm going to do today is actually something I haven't shared yet with anybody. I've been thinking about it for a long, long time. And I knew I was going to do it in this program. And I had faced my own, and still do, demons in doing this. The best way to share a story that's outside of our general experience is, you know, not to make some case for some more theories, but rather to just simply share experience. And so I'm going to share the story of my own experience. As my best illustration and argument for where we are and what happens on the spiritual plane. And it's a story that starts from a religious standpoint and ends and rejects all of that and comes back. Not because these experiences are anything necessarily special. In fact, many of them at the time I simply dismissed and explained away. And it doesn't much matter, really, as you know, different people from different backgrounds listening to this and either dismiss or explain them away. That's not really the point. The point is this, is by the end of the story, I was faced with things that I could no longer explain away. And I was forced to admit that my view of the world was wrong. I was simply looking at things that forced a change in outlook. And I learned a couple of really important things. So I'm going to share the journey with you and some of the conclusions from that. And I guess I'll mute the line while I do that and find my courage and move forward. Okay. All right then. So, you know the old joke, where's the story begin? I was born in a small farm in Indiana. No, not quite that far, but almost. I took a very, very long road getting where I am today, and a very curving road at that. My first spiritual experience, or at least what I thought it was at the time, came at age 2. My best friend Michael lived upstairs, and we got into all kinds of things before I was carted off to kindergarten. He was just 1 month younger, which actually put him a year behind me at school. We were on the December-November line. We even became blood brothers. We pricked our fingers, mingled our blood. You know, never end their mess to make kids. Where we got this idea, I don't know. And Michael introduced me to fairies. We would walk along, whatever there was, dew glinting in the leaves and grass. There were fairies, Michael told me. Only he could see them, of course. You know, and these were fairies took the form of cartoon characters, and Michael housed them in his bottle collection, and we would go through it now and then. He would tell me which one was which, and oh, he was so gifted. Yeah, I know. Well, I got older and a little smarter. I used to fall for magic tricks. Like, here, I'm going to wrap this dime in my handkerchief. Now close your eyes, and then the dime would disappear. So, but the thing is, you know, we grow up where this is totally possible. You know, and we lose that along the way. And I got older. I was raised Catholic. It was a religion that my family took seriously. My dad had been raised Lutheran, converted when he married my mom. My mom taught Sunday school. My dad helped build the church in our small community. I attended Mass, learned about the sacraments, went to confession. I was an altar boy, did everything good Catholic boys do. But there were problems with this scenario. In particular, these problems started with puberty. You know, what I was being told and taught as a good Catholic boy raised in a good Catholic family was at odds with physical reality. You know, my body was telling me something very different than what everybody else is telling me. You know, something just didn't add up here. You know, in high school, another problem was the doctrine of ex cathedra. This is the proclamation in 1870 when the Pope declared that he's infallible when he's acting in his official capacity. I had trouble with this. There were particularly social issues where I had to question what the Vatican was doing. And, you know, I asked my dad about this once, and I got a very angry, defensive repetition to the Vatican line. you know, a number of things. You know, stance against birth control in the face of population explosion and abortions and things like this in impoverished areas. And it didn't make any sense to me. And anybody's explanation was, you know, well, that's what God said. I was an avid reader. I read all kinds of things. You know, I picked up Fritjof Capra's The Tao of Physics. I have no idea why, except I was kind of interested in physics, and I was curious about Taoism, and I started slogging my way through that book, which compares the pretty incredible world of quantum mechanics at the subatomic level and an introduction to Eastern mysticism. And this was my first real opening to the world wasn't the way that we saw that. When I headed off to college, I went to SUNY Fredonia for a year. I dutifully shuffled off to Mass each Sunday. You know, the college chaplain was a nice enough guy, but that's really kind of all I remember. In my sophomore year, I transferred to Ithaca College, and I attended Mass for a while, but I really kind of fell away. The church just wasn't doing it for me. At the same time, though, when I was upset and sleepless at 3 a.m., I'd walk downtown to the cathedral and walk inside and just sit. You could do that in those days. You can find it unlocked or... I have, since I was a child, gone for walks in nature to find peace and solace, and pretty frequently. That's always very important. I was a music major and a performance major at that. And all the classical music world expects is absolute perfection, delivered on the spot while a few thousand people watch in silence. So it's pretty intense pressure. You know, drug abuse among the musicians is common. I escaped that one. But there were two major camps introduced to me in college among my peers who were dealing with this. The first was transcendental meditation. Quite a few of the string players on campus were into this. At the time, it was a little strange to me. You know, their talk of levitation didn't help my feeling. It was pretty strange. I could respect it. You know, George Harrison was into it. That's cool, but it just wasn't, I wasn't following this. My best friends and housemates, though, a couple of trombonists, their teacher introduced them to a slim book, which absolutely did enthrall me, and that was Zen and the Art of Archery. And it describes a master archer, you know, letting what he just simply calls it, quote, it, unquote, shooting at the target and trusting it and being selfless in this regard, it would hit the target, whether in archery, swordsmanship, flower arranging, or the tea ceremony. It introduced me to this concept of no mind, of letting go. It was the way I learned to deal with music performance. It was spiritual without religion per se, and with rituals I could understand. Pay attention to small things, you pay attention to larger things. You know, I even started approaching my bassoon and my guitar with reverence, partners in my music making, not mere tools. Later, from my private music teachers, I would learn, after years of struggling first, the power of breath. Just as in the book, just as in all martial arts, just as meditation teachers teach, let go and breathe. When I learned to do this, I learned that you can sink into a deeper power and effortlessly perform passages that previously had beyond my sense of skill. You know, literally, there's something, you're on stage, the pressure's on, and things are going, the piece is moving too quickly. You've got this very difficult passage, just breathe, and you just drop into this different space, and it just happens. And it's not me, okay? And I think every serious musician could tell you some version of this story. I wasn't calling it God, but there was certainly something more than most people knew or acknowledged, something seemingly mystical, but something very real and a practical, useful, you know, get this passage played sense in a very predictable sense. Still, that just kind of got lumped into, you know, a whole bunch of music skills. I got introduced to a bunch of other stuff. I met Lynn, in my early 20s while working at a bank in the mall. She was a hairdresser, 3 years my senior, and introduced me to a world of New Age ideas and people. She and her mother were friends with June Burke. June Burke has since passed on, but June Burke channeled the seraphim, Julian, and at the time I had never heard of channeling. And they had been friends with Isabel Hickey, a very quirky but down-to-earth astrologer who died in 1980, who incidentally, if you can dig up a copy of her book on astrology, there is no better book on astrology. Lynn was also good friends with a local astrologer, Dennis, and a couple who were into guided meditations, and so I got quite an education in all these stuff. I learned to draw up and read astrology charts. I studied the tarot. My shelves became lined with reference books for both. Lynn and I practiced channeling. I didn't really know what to think. Lynn introduced me to the idea of spirit guides. I meditated, and I came up with a tall Native American guide named Soren Eagle. I liked him. I hoped he wasn't just my imagination, but I didn't know. Once Lynn took me downstate to meet June Burke, who invited us in turn to have a session with Julian. So when I walked into the room for my session, immediately things seemed strange. The energy in the room was askew, as if the floor was in the way somehow. Something was different anyway. I was told I would never lose track of music. I was worried about this career aspect, that it would always be part of my work, and it has been, but also that I would write. At the time, I had no intention of doing so, but since I've written extensively. I was asked whether I had any questions, and I asked about my guides, and Julian identified three main ones, an Egyptian priest, an Atlantean, and a Native American. And even these were described. Suddenly, Julian asked, "Do you know the Indian's name?" I've been taken aback. You know, how would Julian suspect that? And later, I'd wondered whether Lynn had mentioned it to June at some point. I didn't know. I had a session with Elizabeth Stratton, who was a spiritual healer in New York. I had been working on vision improvement, and I went to her as part of that. And I was surprised to get an overall counseling session, and that she so readily honed in on aspects of my childhood, including things I had never told anyone. Lynn introduced me to Seven Rays Bookstore, which was then at its first location. This store is dedicated to a wealth of books about parapsychology, world religions, mysticism, the occult, astrology, tarot, and numerology, magic, Wicca, theosophy, NLP, a host of related New Age books and products, from incense to crystals to music to futons. The used book was especially rich in affordable reads, and quite a few of those found their way home with me. A few years later, Seven Rays moved to Westcott Street, the residential neighborhood just outside of Syracuse University District. And I was looking for more interesting work, and following my intuition one day, walked up to the owner and asked for a job, explaining I was already well-versed in his product. Got hired on the spot. 2 months later, I was the manager. Lynn had moved on, but my education was continuing. When business was slow, there's lots of chance to read, and I did everything. I studied Tai Chi. First, I learned from books, but later I studied at the Tai Chi farm with Master T.T. Liang. I taught Tai Chi and Qigong at the Delphi Healing Arts Center. I collected a shelf full of translations of rare Chinese classics on Tai Chi history and Chinese medicine. Difficult stuff, but on the one hand, I had seen the power of Director Qi. I had felt the benefits of smoothly flowing energy. So I had this direct physical experience. On the other hand, much of the details are beyond a Western understanding of physiology. Was this ancient wisdom or a cultural myth? And again, I didn't know. So this happened a lot. Fascinating stories and factual studies would be mixed with fantastic and unsupported speculation. From ancient Greece, India, Tibet, to tales of Lemuria and Atlantis. Psychics made spectacular claims and were often wrong. And, you know, I know many of these people personally, and they're certainly sincere. And this was a problem with many of the books as well. Things that I could accept were mixed with romantic but sometimes bizarre claims. What to think, what to believe, certainly not everything I was reading. Some other experiences contradicted my reality. And these are the kinds of things that I wanted to talk about today. Once I was slicing bread, not paying attention, with a huge bread knife. I was watching TV over my shoulder and not paying attention, and I sliced halfway through my finger. I could hear someone screaming, and I only realized after a moment that it was me while I was just calmly watching, going about what needed to be done. You know, there was complete separation. Another time, two cars collided head-on right in front of me in slow motion at 60 miles an hour. As I skidded through where they bounced apart, you know, this graceful shower of glass slowly rose like a fountain, time almost at a standstill, and a completely different sense of reality. Another time, I slipped in the shower, and I bashed my head into the edge of the towel rack, and I slipped to the floor in pain and found myself on my back with a throbbing head in the middle of a forest. Soaring Eagle was bent over me, crumpling leaves into a basin of water, applying it to my forehead, saying, "You'll be fine as soon as you can accept it." And I felt this warm, gentle wind blowing. And then I was sitting in the tub, a blood-soaked towel pressed against my forehead. I actually went to work. I was working on a stage crew, where they took one look at me and sent me home. In a few days, I was fine. Years later, when I was extremely upset, I'm not sure I want to go into that story. My dead grandfather showed up to let me know all was well and turn the situation around. Sometimes I had prophetic dreams. Something I dreamed would happen 3 days later. And again, what did I make of all these experiences? What about all the evidence for things like reincarnation? You know, stories of young children remembering events far from their place and time. You know, were these things in our heads? Were these chemical emotional reactions? Were these psychological effects? I didn't know. Could this all be coincidence? Well, you know, that's what usually people say, right? It can't all be coincidence. And I recognize, well, logically, of course it can. Right? Who knows what happens in the mind? We are chemical electrical reactions. Who knows how these things might be interpreted? Of all the events that happened, sure, you know, we could, you know, I had this dream and it really happened. You know, could that be a coincidence? Of course it could. I know hundreds of people. All those ancient cultural beliefs, maybe it was people predisposed to see what they thought was real. Okay. And I also knew that people were quick to grasp to easy explanations. James Randi, the stage magician and the psychic exposer, once passed out horoscopes by astrological sign to everyone in the audience and asked them if they thought theirs was accurate. And everybody pretty much felt they were. Then he had them look at each other's, and every single one was exactly the same. You know, I remember seeing in a logic text once, the problem with reincarnation is that it conflicts with what we know about biology, and that's a problem. And like, yeah, that's a good point. I would later teach philosophy, ethics, and world religions at the college level. But I had come to see these as the human mind grasping to forge connections where there were none. Despite the sincerity and well-meaning devotion of some, and a few downright charlatans, sure. And I could only conclude at that point that God was a myth, that life after death was just wishful thinking, that we were tissues and cells carrying out our electrochemical functions, and that all else was just things that we had not come to understand, perhaps we never would. And, you know, this wasn't agnosticism. I was an atheist, and I could see no other logical position. And, you know, having a good logical explanation to things was important to me. And I could live with that. I was okay with that. The thing is, in clinging to my logic, I wasn't truly being thorough and balanced. I thought I was, But what happened was that things that didn't fit my worldview were just dismissed or forgotten. I think this happened pretty commonly, actually. And I was certainly doing that. So, for example, one night when I first moved out here to the country in 1987, my friend John, he's a fellow musician, he was 20 years older, asked me to come over. We were good chess buddies, and I knew he was lonely, not a lot of company around in the middle of our rural area. And so one night, snow falling heavily, I really didn't want to go out that night, but he asked me to, and I went anyway to keep him company. So we had a nice chat. We played a few chess matches. We discussed literature, and he's a brilliant guy, author, and finally it was time to call it a night. Now, he had this long driveway, and with the snow falling, the driveway and the yard were indistinguishable. By long, I mean like, you know, a few hundred feet. In fact, where the road started was really pretty iffy. So way back then, I was driving a Chevette, and, you know, nice little small car, not something you want to be driving in heavy snow. And I made my very best guess, after a few wrong guesses about where the road was, backed up, tried again, eventually made it to the end of the driveway to the road, more or less, one more backup, and whop, and I was looking up at the sky. I opened the door and climbed out to look. My back wheels were both in the ditch, a good 3-foot drop. I mean, a major ditch. No way was I going to be able to get out of that. And I'm thinking, oh, great, you know, in self-pity. I remember this like it was yesterday. This is my reward for coming out and being nice on a night with bad weather. And exactly as I was thinking this, you're not going to believe this. Exactly as I was thinking this, the car rolled forward out of the ditch and stopped at the top, the wheels just out and back on the pavement. And I just looked in amazement. I just got in and drove home without incident. I didn't know what to say. You know, I still don't. I guess what I should have said is thank you. I had no explanation for that, so I just forgot it. See, I thought people clinging to their religious views of the world were simply interpreting everything according to their thought system. And through that biased lens, naturally, everything they saw would confirm their worldview. And isn't that what culture and religious upbringing do, right? People were the faith they were because their parents chose it for them, not because they had decided Christianity had it over Hindu or Shinto beliefs. I couldn't see that I was doing exactly the same thing with my supposedly unbiased logical approach. Now, at the time, also, you know, I'm not talking about, you know, atheists in the sense of there are some obnoxious Christian baiting atheists I ran across online, and that was never any part of that. That's just silly. That's just ego. But also not of the silly, you know, every Christmas there'll be a round of, boycotting happy holidays because somebody's stealing my Christmas. And all I can think is, oh my God, your faith is so weak. If that's all it takes to steal your Christmas from you, people being polite doesn't undo the Prince of Peace coming to mankind. Get a grip. To be fair, both extremes have some just claims. You know, even considering that the supernatural didn't exist in any form, coming together in community for the common good is, at its heart, a healthy belief to have. And such ideals often fall to pettiness, but were the ideals that remain. And atheist moral systems are composed not by divine decree, but by reason and choice. And as such, they tend to be held in high regard and compliance. You know, after all, that's how I was raised, and I always obeyed my parents. Often aren't heard together, right? So nor do they have any interest in the artificial science versus religion divide. That's what I'm not talking about that here either. The faux fear that some extremists have of science is based entirely upon misrepresentation. And the judgment of religion is antithetical to science is equally willfully blind. It's true, science cannot account for many things. But these things are not just theory, because a theory is a well-tested hypothesis that seems to work. On the other hand, nor does science ever, quote, prove, unquote, anything, as more evidence overturns previous conclusions with each new breakthrough. But this doesn't mean that we don't know anything. We know plenty of things that are well established as working well, and that knowledge grows, and that's science. Equally so, to pretend science presents a complete view of the world, the universe, our nature, our existence, completely ignores a great deal about our lives. Anyway, I came by that realization slowly. Only after a series of discussions and debates did a friend finally corner me on this point, that much of what we sought to know and understand were not only beyond the reach of science, but likely to remain so, being different in kind, not merely in evolution. Like the Tao of physics presents, mysticism and science pervade each other, despite our many misunderstandings, and the mysteries that remain in reconciling the quantum world with its manifestations, the local with the universal, the material with the ethereal, and all these sorts of mysteries in science. So, being open, more open anyway, made me more tolerant of views I'd normally have dismissed as error or ignorance. At first, I figured the problem was just a misconception of the divine as a personal entity, rather than as a force or unifying principle underlying or unifying the natural world. Tao worked nicely for me for this purpose. As the Tao, T-A-O, as the Tao Te Ching notes, Taoists don't know what it is. They don't try to define it. You know, as the Tao Te Ching starts with, those who know do not tell, those who tell do not know, that there's a flow to the universe. You know, and no wonder nature so inspired peace for me. The Kabbalah describes the divine as exploding into infinite bits comprising the universe, that each of us is part of the divine. Hinduism adds 7 layers of existence, right? The higher ones join in a single being, the layers of being we've talked about. In ancient China, a musical note, the kong, was said to resonate to harmonize creation. And in the cities, noise drowned out the kong and the harmony. Sufi mystic Hazrat Inayat Khan explains that each of us vibrates at a given sound, and that some sounds harmonize well, others don't, sometimes changing back to harmony when still more sounds are added. The problem with all of this, as Eckhart Tolle explains, we are trying to define the indefinable, and in so doing, we limit the divine to what it is not by the act of attempted definition. For a time, this worked for me. Okay? I figured people who believed in God were just misinterpreting the natural basis for our universe, whatever that was, Tao for me. I had no problem with prana for yoga or qi for tai chi or qigong. But somehow grace or personification of deities was too much. Could all these people from all these ages and places be mistaken? Sure they could. It was a cultural myth predisposing believers, right, to unwittingly seek out coincidence and take it as proof of their perceived truth. Seek and you shall find, because you get where your attention is focused. Well, when I needed retuning, I headed into nature. I run across ski an hour or two every day. And take a day a week and go out as Tim Day. I usually head to the Adirondacks or take long hikes or skis in the wilderness. Hearing only the balance of nature, the detached disconcern Mother Nature has when to venture into her strongholds, right, the kung sounding clearly. and many of my complex problems were solved here, and just giving myself the space to unwind. But things were about to change in my perfect little world. And this started when I met and dated Beth. Beth was somebody I dated a few months. We broke up. A few months broke up, one of those deals. And I was on my way to have lunch and return a few things I had of hers and pick up a few of mine at the end of the relationship, so we thought. One of the items was a CD she had lent me from The Vortex by Jerry and Esther Hicks, two authors she adored. I had never heard of before. I had never listened to it. But in case it was any good, I burned a copy on my way there. It was a 75-minute drive, and just for the heck of it, popped it into the car CD player. And the CD was a session with Abraham, the group of beings that Esther channeled. I had heard of Abraham back in my Seven Rays days. I didn't remember Esther and Jerry. I had heard of Abraham, but never really given the material much attention then. This time, it changed my perspective on that trip. The discussion was the importance of contrast in our lives and of the people that show us the contrast. The law of attraction, something I had always taken as wishful thinking, was presented as a focus on the positive aspects, to focus our energy on building what we want, not on what we don't want, by negative focus. Instead of seeking closure, then, at that meeting, I laid a ground for a friendship. She had forgotten my stuff. I just let it go. And a few winks by, we started talking again. But I opened the door to the realization that my thoughts were creating my experience, and that this happened in conjunction with the spiritual reality of our existence. This was new for me. We went on to get together, break up, become friends, never speak again, one of these deals. But while we were together, Beth got the idea to get a reconnection. I had never heard of this. And she explained a bunch of stuff I had trouble accepting literally, about 12 strands of DNA connection and so forth. Okay. But she went to her friend and psychic Cindy Staffen, who performed the session. The whole thing kind of a little strange to me, as she had to wear gloves and extra socks and a sweater because people got very cold during the sessions. And she looked for a copy of Eric Pearl's book, The Reconnection, but she'd loaned it out to somebody, and I didn't really mind. I had plenty to read and was really only marginally interested until I heard about the sessions. I felt wonderful, you know, she shared, and she starts recounting the various sensations. I was intrigued, and I ordered my own copy of the book. When we broke up again, a lot of other things in my life were unsettled. They weren't bad. They're just not where I wanted to feel. I was looking for direction, and I couldn't find it. I couldn't put my finger on it. And finally, somehow, I got into my head that I should get a reconnection done. And the problem was I wasn't really sure where I was going. Beth had pointed out Cindy's place in passing once, as in it's down that street over there, in a city I didn't know well at all. But I headed down to check it out just the same, 75-minute drive one way. And, you know, it was just a series of events where the doors just opened at every... just as soon as I got there. My loose guess about where the neighborhood was spot on. I walked down the street, immediately saw what must be Cindy's store. I walked in, was immediately greeted by a friendly person who had just hung up the phone. Said, "Hi, can I help you?" Said, "Yeah, I'm looking for Cindy." She says, "I'm Cindy." And it was that easy. I explained I was a friend of Beth's. I left out the breakup part. I was interested in a reconnection. And she says, "Have you ever had any reconnected feeling?" And I said, "Well, I read Eric's book." Well, to be honest, I sort of skimmed it. I read it later. She goes, "Okay, good. I'm booked out for a couple of months, but you could come in the morning. We could do Wednesday and Thursday." And I could. It was that easy. Because I had no experience with reconnective healing, she suggested I get a healing session first, but that we could do a distance healing for that. She called me and just to make sure we were set up, hang up, do the session, call back in 30 minutes, and okay, done. So I'd been through my share of New Age energy treatments and techniques, and while I respected them, it had been mainly subtle changes and sensation at best. So I figured something like that. I was wrong. I immediately felt an intense heat around my head, like a cross between increased pressure and temperature. Instantly, I felt basketball-sized swirls of energy under my feet, nothing subtle at all. My hands and legs jerked involuntarily at times. I learned later that these are common reactions to reconnective frequencies. And my stomach was hot. I mean, really hot. One of my cats was curled up on my stomach, and I actually moved her to check whether that was the reason. It wasn't. And then the phone rang. It seemed like 5 minutes, but it had been 30 minutes. And she said, I felt guided to work on your stomach. And, you know, I didn't know what was going on, but something was going on. It was very, very real. So the next morning, I had my gloves, my extra socks, my sweater, the extra dose of curiosity and anticipation. I lay on Cindy's massage table, closed my eyes. Instantly, again, felt intense heat and energy around my head. And again, basketball swirls of energy under my feet and palms, but much, much more. At times, my fingers would twitch, even my whole hand. My feet and legs switched at times. I felt huge clouds of energy, sometimes warm and bright, sometimes cool. My feet were freezing by the end. I could feel one of my arms as if I had lifted it at the elbow, but I knew it was still lying flat on the table. I felt incredibly very relaxed, very peaceful. And then for the longest time, my eyes still closed, I saw a large cross of white light floating over me, as if I were in a huge cathedral, like at a funeral, you know, laying out there. But it wasn't a funeral feeling at all, just intense peace. And then Cindy touched my shoulder, signifying the end of the session. It had been almost 45 minutes. It felt like 5 or 10 minutes. Cindy said that she had looked at my feet and thought, are they vibrating? I think they were. Relaxed for a bit, I gathered myself together. She went to open a store, and I went to get on with my day, and I had to sit for a while. My car was across from a park, and I went to sit on a bench. And I felt strange in this really wonderful way, and the energy of the tree I was watching just seemed to flow through me, and a squirrel ran across the grass of the tree, and I could feel it. And I thought, well, maybe it's my imagination. But there was no denying the feeling. So anyway, I started my long drive to get to work. The next morning, we had strong winds and heavy rain, and there was flooding everywhere. I had to detour around some closed roads, and I was concerned I would be late. And I did all right, all in all, quickly parking my car up the street, 10 minutes late. I jumped up and ran about 20 feet when a very clear voice in my head screamed, "Your gloves!" Like, oh, yeah. I ran back, grabbed my bag with my gloves, hat, sweater, water bottle, and ran to Cindy's door. She was completely calm about the whole thing. She goes, "I was just getting ready," she explained about her day. She looked up and said, "He's going to be late." So we just got back to it. And like the day before, she had a pillow ready to go under my knees for my back to relieve the pain. A couple of years later, my doctor had pointed out from an annual physical on my knee reflexes, one of the knees only showed a slight reaction. And he goes, "You see that? It's degenerative disc disease, all four. Does it bother you?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, there's nothing we can do for it. When it gets worse, I can give you something for the pain." And it was getting worse. It was starting to interfere with my activities. When I injured my knees a year later, the first time, I injured my knees quite a bit. The treatment started with a prescription antibiotic, which helped, or not antibiotic, anti-inflammatory, which helped my back pain a little. Physical therapy eventually helped clear up my knee problem. But beyond some exercise to help bring strength to the back muscles, there wasn't much to do about the back pain. Well, anyway, ready for day two, pillow in place, gloved and socked, sweatered. Again, I felt heat and energy around my head. I felt clouds of energy, bright and warm, sometimes cool. Again, swirls of energy beneath my fingers, hands, feet, legs jerking involuntarily. I could feel my hands in places other than I knew I had them. That was the same as the day before. What was different is that this large white cross of light came much sooner. Right at first, I wondered if the session had ended so soon. Came back twice more, each time filling me with peace, feeling like I was in a great cathedral. My hands and my feet, especially my feet, were freezing. but nothing prepared me for what came next. I felt a gentle but firm hand on my stomach, steadying me. There was a golden cord going through my body to my spine. A large hand wrapped around the base of my spine. Another grasped the cord. "Ready?" a voice asked in my head. And I nodded, or not really, the sensation of nodding. And the hands pulled down on my spine and up on the cord hard, very hard, while the hand steadying me held me down. My back arched sharply, for real. My head flew back, again, for real. The treatment was mildly painful, but mainly it was a rush of good feeling and a sudden release of my lower back pain. There was a brief period of rest, a second or two. "Again!" cried the voice, and again my head flew back, my back arched, the hands pulled hard on my spine and the cord. It was wonderful. A brief rest, a few seconds longer than before. "Okay, one more time," coaxed the voice, and I nodded, or the sensation of nodding, and one last time, the hands pulled much harder and much longer than before. My entire body responded to the treatment and the flood of good feeling. As the pain was released and my spine and body settled comfortably back to the table. A few months later, incidentally, at my annual physical, my doctor again tested my reflexes, doing it when I wasn't expecting it by telling a joke before I even knew what he was doing. Both reflexes completely normal. Back pain was all but gone. Today it is gone. The cross of white light came back again. The session returned to more familiar patterns with the exception of freezing feet and fingers. I felt incredibly wonderful. When Cindy touched my shoulder to signify the end of the session, she looked at me and says, "Are you back yet?" And it really wasn't. And I shook my head, kind of no. Again, it felt like it had been 35 minutes or so, or 5 minutes. It had been 35. Cindy said she felt like she was flying through it all, just guided. She checked her notes to make sure she had done everything. She floated through the whole thing. It took me about 20, 30 minutes to gain enough mental wherewithal to stand up and function. And she had opened a store, but I was in no shape to drive. I'd walked a few blocks downtown for coffee and a sandwich and just hung out for an hour before I even dared to drive. But when I returned to the car, I just felt wonderful, lighter, floating. And that feeling not only stayed with me all day, but grew continually throughout the day, like I was rising and rising gently in mood and lightness. I took a leisurely scenic drive. You know, everything was fine. Some angry driver cut me off, and I was just like, okay. And I just felt better and better and better. It was at the time the closest I've ever been to enlightenment. I've been closer since then, but anyway. So while that was maybe the most dramatic, it's not the only interesting experience I had that spring and summer. And all these were surprises, none of my doing. A friend and I were driving down to Peekskill to see Gandalf Murphy, a.k.a. the Grand Sambovians, my favorite band. We can stay at a friend's house, my friend explained. And then we could visit the Buddhist monastery, want to? I didn't know there was a monastery, did I? And I did. This is in Lake Carmel, New York, contains the largest Buddha sculpture in North America. It's 5 stories high. The path to the temple is lined with sculpture of enlightened devotees and teachers, a really impressive array. There's a cloud of incense burning. Inside the temple, there's a table piled high with free devotions, literature. Around the Buddha, there's a painting of several bodhisattvas, and this is a really impressive place. We'll talk about bodhisattvas next week. Next door is Kuan Yin Hall, equally inspiring, if not quite so huge, and even more powerful is Seven Jewels Lake, which has a deck over the water where there's a beautifully organic Kuan Yin sculpture. And I stood awestruck again in silent communing. And when I did venture to the railing, I saw the lake was just teeming with koi fish. You could almost walk across them. And then a white one came swimming across the lake right to my feet. And a few minutes later, a gold one did the same thing out of the sea of brown fish. And I just took it in, whatever that was all about. And another trip, again, I was simply invited to do this. Didn't plan it. I traveled to the Bearsville Theater outside of Woodstock to see Amma Sri Karunamurthy, Karunamai, who's considered to be an incarnation of the Divine Mother. I felt compelled to go and hear her speak and receive a blessing. She talked about Hindu astrology, which is a very complicated subject. Lecture was a little hard to follow. Then we had a long wait before we took our terms of the blessing from Amma. There was a long period of chanting, looking at a protected image of a Hindu god, I'm not sure which one, sitting in lowest position against the universe and lightning bolts. And after looking at this for several hours, I had a mini revelation. Hinduism is a very complex religion, one I've always respected but never really understood well. And here I realized that what I was seeing was not a depiction of godlike powers, but of universal energy, of a continuum, of a field that connected us all. And I mean not that I had an intellectual understanding, but really a feeling of connection. When my turn came with Amma, I forgot the suggestion that we not speak. I was told it waste Amma's precious gift and said hello very softly, so I'm not a saint. She didn't say anything. She took the index card I'd given her with my prayers on it, and she gently stroked my forehead, something she had not done with the other people before me. I received her blessing. We looked around the theater, and starving went out to eat. I can't explain why this was a significant event, but it still strikes me as something really important that happened for reasons I really can't say. I hope that there's a way to understand that. During this same period, I had a bunch of really strange dreams that were not typical of me. When I started looking to put these down, I realized that they actually hadn't been dreams, that they're dream-like. The first was one night when I was trying to get to sleep. Not often, but time to time I have insomnia. It's frustrating. But this night was different. I lay there 3 hours before I finally slept, but I didn't mind at all. The entire time I felt embraced by this incredible love. And behind my closed eyes, I saw myself surrounded by flowers, red and pink roses and lotuses. The entire time was blissful beyond description. It was as deeply, truly, and unconditionally loved. And I was tired, but incredibly at peace, not frustrated at all. Another night, I woke, half woke really, somewhere in the midnight, middle of the night, two-ish, I think. I didn't see a clock, so who knows. I felt wonderful and heard a voice say, "Now try this in your home environment." Like I was in a class given a project to try. I understood that I was to continue this feeling of wonderfulness in the context of my home. And I did, never opening my eyes for 5 minutes, I believe, until I drifted back into sleep, presumably back to class. One morning, as I talked about this last week, I was woke kind of all concerned, and this is when I saw that swarm of clouds, thoughts, like a thought cloud. Okay, and that I could enter it or not enter it. And then later I could see this with my friend Louise, who had this beautiful energy. One time when she was going through a rough spot, you could see this cloud of thoughts moving back and forth around her energy. One afternoon I was making a fresh pot of coffee, and just out of nowhere I felt an incredible blessing descend on me, filling with the most wonderful feeling of love. I have no idea what this is about, other than the sudden and distinct feeling that someone or something had bestowed a blessing for whatever reason, or maybe no reason, just a random act of blessing, I don't know. And I remember another time, long, long time ago, I was awakened abruptly with the distinct feeling I'd been slammed hard into my mattress, hearing a voice shout, "Go!" over the clock, and I was late for work and had to hustle. So when I started putting all these things down, I thought, geez, I sound like some flaky weirdo. Perhaps somebody trying to convince somebody else of a game who's more spiritual, right? But I'm looking at this now that's recording. My point in sharing this with you is this. I think we all have a wide range of spiritual experiences that we simply forget or discard. That you actually sit down and seriously think about, oh, yeah, now that he mentions that, it reminds me of this one time. And if you start following those threads, you'll find other times, things that you've all but forgotten. And then you realize, wait a minute, it's not like I've had a few things. All kinds of things have happened to me. I think that most people would find this. When they happen, you're like, who do you talk to? So we don't really talk to anybody and we bury them. When I mentioned this exercise to my friend Louise, she shared a time when she and her daughter were stopping to get gas, when out of nowhere, this giant of a man driving a tractor trailer cab pulled up behind them suddenly and said, hey, you got gas leaking all over. Don't start the car. It might blow up. And she looked, and indeed, gas was leaking anywhere. And when she looked back to thank him, he was gone. You know, where'd he go? She asked her daughter. Her daughter asked, gone. My friend Dennis tells at a time when his friend was going through a very hard time, divorce, work, personal doubts, fears. And we were just sitting on the beach trying to sort things out when a very nice stranger walked by and said hello. He was the kind of person very easy to talk to, ended up sitting down and listening for a couple of hours, gave some calm advice, listened some more, gave a few more calm words, listened again, and Dennis's friend started feeling a lot better and began to see things in a clearer perspective. Well, I should get going, the stranger said finally, with a friendly goodbye, took his leave. And when Dennis's friend turned around to thank him, he was gone. Now, frankly, I'd have doubted these stories. But later events really brought this into reality for me. So after my reconnection, I got into my head I wanted to learn how to do this. And there was a seminar coming up in Cape Cod, and I signed up and did that. And as you might imagine, what I learned was incredible enough. I could feel this energy in my hands, that I could impact what was happening to a person on the massage table without touching them was beyond interesting. That this could readily be done at a distance was really challenging, and I was already feeling kind of speechless. And one of the volunteers from the side said, I've been watching you. You know, you seem to just know where to go next. Your hands move there before the instructions. And she was right. I could feel the lines in the progression. It was almost obvious. You know, we are energetic beings. You know, and by the way, your work is very good, the instructor told me after scrutinizing my drawings of all the lines and the points that we were required to do. And intense as this was, though, the real changes came when I got home. And Louise's stepmom had a bad fall. She'd hit her head. She was in the ICU. The doctors warned examining her x-ray that with this kind of injury to that part of the brain, she would just get worse. At best, she'd be in a nursing home, essentially a vegetable. More likely, she wouldn't live long. I felt helpless. I wanted to do something for Louise and her stepmom. And not knowing what else to do, I decided to practice my new healing skills. In particular, since we did reconnections kind of quickly rather than in real time, you know, we'd never get through all the class, I wanted to practice in real time. And though they don't teach reconnections for distance healing, I figured no harm in trying, and perhaps the intention would benefit her. So I found a nice spot outside in the shade of some maple trees, imagined her on my massage table, and was about to start the reconnection sequence when a voice in my head said, no. And I understood that to mean to do a healing instead. So I did a distance healing. When I was finished, several minutes later, I segued into my reconnection practice. Now, I was quite engaged in this task, counting out time, referring with a glance to my notes at times. And when I looked up from the head of my table, I saw Jesus, Kuan Yin, and a circle of angels surrounding me in the table. Now, I didn't even believe in Jesus anymore. I hadn't for years. Perhaps an amazing figure in history, who knows? But here I was, and here he was. And the first thought in my head is, if Jesus is here, why am I doing this? You know, I mean, what greater healer could one want than Jesus? And the immediate answer in my head was, continue doing what you're doing. This is also one of the six phrases that Eric Pearl had been told over and over again. And these are repeated us to in the training seminar and stressed to this, that this is a message for us as well. So I continued doing what I was doing. What else could I do? I hadn't believed in angels either, but here I was with, you know, the Sacred Heart, the Goddess of Compassion, and an angelic host. What can I tell you? I was wrong. You know, in my head, I don't know. I'm just telling you what happened. But it certainly isn't something I can just dismiss. Today, when people talk about finding God, I tell them I didn't find God. He came to get me. But he did so when I needed him, when Louise's stepmom needed him. Incidentally, Louise's stepmom is, years later, is doing just fine. She lives independently in her own house. Complete recovery. Years ago, Louise had told me how she had seen Jesus when she was a child. And at the time, I believe she believed what she saw, but she'd been a child. After my reconnection, when I explained what happened with the white cross of light and how wonderful and peaceful it made me feel, you know, I didn't know what it was about. And Louise said, hello, reconnection. So, yeah, she was right. So Louise was my first healing patient after that. And I was doing the session, and she said, you're playing with my hair. And I wasn't. In fact, I was standing at her feet. But Norm, her stepmom's deceased love, used to play with people's hair, the top of their heads, just as Louise felt during her session. Louise's friend Rita was next and wanted help with her shoulder. But in the second session, I had this continual sense that we were not alone. And I kept seeing a man's face superimposed over hers and a presence over her head. The third session, there was just no doubt about this. Eric Pearl's book talks about his clients seeing people who aren't there, but I hadn't counted on seeing them myself. And something was just really out of balance. I didn't know what to do. So I remembered Jesus, Kuan Yin, and the angels, figured they couldn't be far, and said, look, directing my, you know, my mental speech to this man, it's time for you to go. Whatever happened, all is forgiven. One of these angels will show you the way, go with them. And peace and balance returned to the session. And then after the session, when I touched Rita on the shoulder, she immediately said, he's gone. And I hadn't talked to her about this. And then only then she told me a story of how she'd been abused by a man as a child. She says, I feel lighter. And this is a theme, these people feeling touched, you know. My friend Molly says, are you sure you didn't touch me? I hadn't. You know, my friend Doug says, strange, somebody was holding my hand. And nobody was, that I saw. Gradually, I would have to admit something I had been reluctant to acknowledge, and something that today I know without a doubt. And you don't have to accept this. I'm just simply sharing what my experience has been. We are not alone. When we're talking about a spiritual plane, we are not alone. There are always spirits around us. Death is hardly an end. It's a change of state. I had really, really wanted to embrace this radical, logical view of the world. But there'd be nothing rational and logic about ignoring evidence and experiences directly in front of me. We live in a spiritual world, and that's simply reality. However long it took me to accept it, however long it takes anybody else. And I'm not alone. I frequently hear people struggling with what they call, you know, the God thing. As Tolle said, trying to make the infinite definite creates a problem. So, you know, how can we start to bridge this? Well, this is something that we talked about in the first step because I knew that we would need this aspect. This is where I first heard this man who was a very devout Christian offered this advice during one group discussion about faith that surprised me. And he said, I grew up with a punishing, vengeful God. You know, and a lot of people feel this way. So I had to fire his ass. You know, thank you for all your years of service. You got me through childhood. I appreciate it. But now it's time for you to go. And he says, I sat down and sketched out the qualities of a God with whom I could do business. And it's just simply not as crazy as it sounds. You know, it comes down to this. Sit down and figure out what you believe, however little, even if that's almost nothing. No faking, no forcing beliefs, no pretending, no making the best of it all. What is it that you can accept? You know, as Jesus' parable relates in Matthew 17, faith the size of a mustard seed can move a mountain. But real faith, not settling, okay? And that's the hardest part for people. We don't need a vision. We don't need the cooperation of the universe. We don't need a guru. We don't need a comprehensive knowledge of religious texts. We don't need psychic powers. We don't need a really colorful aura. All we need to do is take a good, hard, thorough, honest look at ourselves and what we truly believe. Okay? Not reaction to what others are doing or did. Not saying or thinking or teaching or preaching. What do you, bottom line, believe, even if you're coming from a place of complete rejection of religion? What do you believe? You know, for me, that was a sense of energy and nature, right? Even if we just are, what is it that animates us? Even if it's just managing our electrochemical, hormonal, balance, perception, experience, that's something, okay? Forgetting about the list of what we don't believe, that's where people get hung up. It's the wrong direction, okay? So we don't believe aliens seeded the planet. Okay. You know, is reconnection a Palladian practice, as some claim? Don't know. Don't care. You don't believe a loving creator would create good and evil? Okay. You don't believe you go to heaven or hell or we die? Fine. Doesn't matter. Forgot all that. Because all the things are what other people believe. You know, Tim, you tell some interesting stories, but it's a lot to swallow. Don't swallow them. My experience. But really looking at what do you believe? My point in sharing all this is that if you really sit down and look at what has happened to me, what has been my experience, what is my experience now, my contention, even if at first you think, no, not for me, nothing, nada, is that once you sit down, you realize, oh my God, he's right. I can think of, like, maybe not instantly tonight, but over the next week, because this is your homework, I bet you can think of, you know, 12, 20 things where you're like, yeah, this did happen, and I don't know what that was about. I kind of sort of forgot that. Once we start to get the mental out of the way, we can really start to look at this spiritual core, and not as something far off, but something that is right in front of us. We just are normally blind to it because we have all these other things in the way. So this is the segue for meditating. Just breathe, just relax. This is the segue for being aware, right? So we became, you know, aware that in the physical world, what we see, we don't even admit to ourselves, right? So we have to step back and say, let me look honestly at what's going on in my physical world. Let me look honestly at my role and my emotional things. Let me look at my thoughts in a way that doesn't assume that they're my identity. Then we can start to bridge this concept of no mind and start to understand this world of experience, this world of spiritual things. Want to be practical and rational? We are, scientifically speaking. We've known this for a century. We are vibration. We are energy. We are frequency. That's it. That's it. That's all everything is. We are not these, you know, physical shells battling around. We are energy, frequency, vibration. Period. Period. Power of music, right? It's frequency of vibration. Subatomic physics, energy and vibration. If you want to read a wonderful practical application of this, pick up Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich and read it not as a book on wealth, but for what he keeps saying is that abundance is a vibration. It's a vibration. Rather than I want this money, but rather abundance is like this river, right? To be sustainable, things need to be flowing in, things need to be flowing out, a continual thing. So let me pause for a minute before I share this next part and see if people have things to reflect on. So here's a whole bunch of stuff I never tell people.
Wow. I appreciate that you shared your story with us. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm having a hard time finding my words. Sorry, there they are. This is Janine.
Hey, Janine.
I think you telling going through the story, one, I'm very moved. So thank you for being so vulnerable with all of us and really just, I know you had to take a breath there and just continue to share. One of the things that came up for me is when I was very young, I always felt like there was a bubble around me. And then as I've gotten older, I swear I can make myself invisible, but when you look at me, my physical being, there's nothing about me that's invisible. Like I'm not little. I have red hair. Like I have very vibrant white skin. Like I'm not invisible. So it's good to go back and look at that. And then that's also how I feel, how I found all of you, because even though we absolutely know nothing about each other, I know without a shadow of a doubt that we're all supposed to be here. Like, that's another thing that came very clear to me. Because I think, how did I end up here? Like, I still don't get it. I'm like, how did I end up on this call? Like, I think I'm the only one on the West Coast. I'm like, why aren't more people, like, why isn't everyone doing this? Like, why aren't my spiritual friends even noticing what I'm doing? So it's kind of interesting, but it became very clear that the connection that I have with each and every person in this group is very real.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I
really...
Go ahead. There is a time for everyone. There is a time for everyone to come to this.
I really appreciate. Thank you, Tim, for sharing your story. I absolutely agree or see very clearly the spiritual interactions that I've had over the course of my life, and it's and right up to this class. Like was just shared, Kuan Yin is one of my spirit guides. She was first mentioned to me. I didn't know who she was, and I started to do some research, and then she appears to me in a lot of different ways. And when Heather mentioned that she was doing this class, and I had heard of the reconnection from another friend, but I really didn't know much about it. And as soon as I turned onto your page and saw that it was named Kuan Yin Healing, it was like, oh, okay. Like, I feel like this whole set of understanding came through. But it is incredible how we do get to this process where you may not just share that information with everyone, but it starts to become so much a part of our lives or something shifts or something. But like, I know for me that right now, like I have felt in the last 2 years, my grandmother who passed and I was with her when she passed, I feel her with me in a way that I've never felt with any other relative that has passed. Or I am not a person who I would normally say, like, you know, feels real connected to the spirit world, but I'm so confident that she's with me, and I guess that those spirits have always been with me, and it's just the more I tune in. And then it gets to the point where I, like, don't even feel weird or embarrassed mentioning that to someone. I sort of forget that maybe there's people that would still find that really weird to mention. But there is, and like, you know, this process of getting here and moving through it, it is incredible. And I guess, like, for me, I want to wrap my brain around it, and yet there's my overthinking again. It's sort of like I don't need to understand it. It's more an accepting it. It's a more deeper thing than something that goes on in my brain.
Yeah, one of the most powerful things I ever heard from Howard Jacobson was he talked about learning to let go of his need to understand everything.
That's me.
My favorite story in the Upanishads, the major, well, there are many, but one of the major Hindu spiritual texts, it's the Kena Upanishad. There's this wonderful story where one day the devas are proudly celebrating some great victory when a yaksha is like a spirit, appears before them, and they didn't recognize it. So they sent Agni, the god of fire, to find out. When Agni approaches the yaksha, it asks him, "What can you do?" And Agni answers, "I'm fire. I can burn all that is on the earth." The Yaksha holds out a straw, says, "Burn this." And Agni exerts all his power but can't burn it. And Agni returns, still without the identity of the spirit. The Devas then set Vayu, the god of wind, to inquire. And as he approached, the Yaksha asks him, "What can you do?" And Vayu answers, "I am wind. I can blow all that is on the earth." The Yaksha held out a straw. "Blow this." And Vayu tries mightily but can't move it. He returns also without the identity of this mysterious spirit. And finally, the Devas sent Indra, the chief of the gods. As he approached, the Yaksha disappeared, and in its place appeared Uma Hamavati, who's the daughter of the Himalayas. But Indra asked her who the great Yaksha had been. She replied, "Indeed, it was Brahman. Brahman is the chief energetic god. Through him alone, you all achieved victory." And this is how the Upanishads begin. "Filled with Brahman are all things that are. Filled with Brahman are all things that are not. Without Brahman, even the gods are powerless." And so in addition to this going back through and looking at your own spiritual experiences, buried or forgotten though they may be, there's one more thing I'd like to ask you to do. And just bear with me for a minute. I want you to add, and it can be just a small thing, but I would like you to add the practice of prayer. And by prayer, I want to stress that I don't mean necessarily in any religious or even God context, or even if you believe in nothing, that this is an important practice. And here's why. Here's why. There's a higher energy than just us, than our egos. Whatever you believe that to be, and it's not important. But here's what is important. It's not you. Okay? That's the point. And prayer reminds us of this. So if you're a religious person, no problem. Say your prayer, turn it over to God, let go of the outcome, whatever happens is as it should be. But if you don't subscribe to any religion or any kind of spiritual belief of that nature, pray just the same. To whom do you pray? Who cares? Just pray. It will remind you that you are not the powers that be. And when you align yourself with what is instead of what isn't, you too will go to recognize that you are, so to speak, filled with Brahman. Even when you're convinced you're talking to nothing, do it anyway. What have you got to lose? Try it. In time, you will be amazed. And here's why. Even if nothing else, it will help you out of your egoic self, which is holding you back. So, we've talked about the importance of asking for help, right? Allies, goddess. This is the ultimate asking for help. You know, the way we just talked, there's this whole spirit world. Ask it for help. That's what it's doing there. For this reason of getting out of ourselves, I really like this prayer. Please put in my path the people who can help me. This is beautiful, both in appeals to a power greater than yourself, while simultaneously reminding you not to try to do everything by yourself. And it has you looking outside of yourself and your own thinking for fresh perspectives and new approaches. I would add to this, be ready to be surprised. Be open to being surprised. And before long, you'll experience so many wonderful coincidences that you'll find yourself embracing prayer as the powerful tool that it is. Okay? So to think of prayer in this sense, it's a recognition that your ego does not run the universe. That's what prayer is. And it's a really important recognition. And that's the importance of a spiritual direction. You know? Call in the big guys on this. And is what you have, and this is part of your being as well. But we tend to limit our understanding at the mental realm because we insist on wrapping our heads around it. And as soon as we get above the mental realm, you cannot wrap your head around it because your head is not, your thoughts are not fast enough energy. That's why the reconnection is so powerful. That's why often some people are abruptly peaceful. It cuts right through all that stuff because it's too slow a vibration for it to recognize. And there's not a logical chain because we're dealing at a faster vibration than that. And it will grow because if you look back to the levels of being chart that we worked with right from week one, you know, and you look at where the mind is on that chart, you notice that there are levels, you know, there are various degrees of mind, just as there are degrees of physical states. And the highest, it's the highest aspect of mind where we start to have, you know, intuition and connection to the soul. And that's what we usually think of as spiritual, but it's not. That's still in our heads. There's this whole spiritual aspect of our being that is higher than that. And so we can use that as a bridge. But as you start to being open to this and turning to that and asking for help there first, you know, you will start to experience, just in the same way this week you're saying, you know, it was really hard to pull my thoughts back at first, but then it got easier. Do the same thing. It will get easier. It will get easier. And craft it in whatever way makes you feel comfortable, in whatever way is meaning to you. But it will get you out of the self and into those higher vibrations, and then to starting to experience those things directly in a way that you are not going to be able to think about them. And that will help us get ready for the week after. How's that for homework? Okay, can we live with that?
Yes.
Okay, any questions, comments, rebellions, experiences, recipes?
Hey, this is Heather. I just wanted to share something kind of interesting today.
Uh-huh.
I was going to pipe up at the beginning of the call, and I just felt like listening more so. But as it relates directly to just the coincidences thing, I just think I'll share for 30 seconds here a sort of bizarre happening this week. So I go to get my inspection sticker, you know, of course, a day late of when it's due for first of the month, and find out that not only do I have no cash on me, but I lost my ATM card and couldn't get cash. And then by the time I borrowed cash from somebody to go get the inspection sticker, I found out that my car wasn't registered and my insurance had lapsed. Somehow in the midst of me moving over the past month, all of these things. So my car is literally unregistered, uninsured, and no inspection sticker. That's accurate. So I go to sign my son up for this new school we're going to be going to in the fall, park on the side of the road, walk up the path, come out from the school to get back in my car, and literally there was two collisions right side by side of my car, both cars practically totaled, not a scratch on mine. But what? The car's not insured? Like, talk about divine intervention of just, you know, angel on your shoulder through this whole thing. It was the most bizarre thing of events insofar as, you know, signs and beliefs and, you know, guidance being with me, and then, you know, 20 different things just popped into my head as you were saying, reflect over, you know, your life, different things, from being pulled out of a drowning situation by this, you know, beautiful white angel and unbelievable things. So it's just nice to finally be that playful child again that can, you know, be there and connected with this and fully supported when I've been struggling for so many years to wonder where has my support been. So thank you for sharing tonight. That was really appropriate.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Mm.
It's cool when those things happen. Yeah, the yoga teachers warned us, the yoga texts warned us not to get caught up in the siddhas, and the siddhas are, you know, like mystical manifestations of things, because they're distractions rather than the point. But they're still fun, you know. When I had just this weekend, I went out to get the lawn tractor going before the grass takes over the world out here, and I turned the key, and the battery is all but dead. And so, okay, so I head off to get a new battery for the lawn tractor and manage to I'm not good with these things, but I managed to find the right battery and to get it back and look at the tractor and go, I just take off. I just unscrew this, change the battery, screw this in. Okay, I'll be mowing grass in no time. And I'm trying to do this before the thunderstorms roll in, or I wouldn't be able to mow for another week. And I get inside to pick up my socket wrench. Okay, well, if this one's too big, I need to go find the sockets. And I get in to find the sockets, and sometime over the winter, you know, one cat has to chase the other cat, and the sockets are, like, all over and under stuff. And it's like, it could take hours to find this. And there's, like, one small monkey wrench left in this wrench set. And I said, well, let me just run out. Maybe I can get it to work with this. And I get outside, it's the perfect size. The one wrench that's left. It's like, okay, thanks. And 30 seconds later, I'm on my way. Mm-hmm. It's just cool when stuff like that happens.
Mm-hmm.
So, maybe not the height of spiritual development or anything like that, but fun. Okay, so everybody's clear on the two parts of the homework. I guess we'll move on to our group healing and the week 4 transcript is on its way. Mm-hmm. More slowly than I'd like, but it's on its way. And the week 5 transcript will be much faster because most of what I shared was already written. So I can just share a lot of that. And next week we'll get into awareness. So this week's homework is especially important that we start to bridge that gap. You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Namaste.
Namaste.
Okay.
Namaste.